From the heart of our nation's capital in Washington, D.C., bringing compelling interviews, insightful analysis, taking you beyond the headlines and sound bites into conversations with our nation's leaders and newsmakers, all from a biblical worldview. Sitting in for Tony is today's host, Jody Heiss.
The charges we are announcing today stem from the defendants and their co-conspirators' detailed, coordinated plot to bomb multiple U.S. companies on New Year's Eve. Thankfully, that plot has now been foiled, thanks to the hard work of the FBI and the Department of Justice.
Wow, that was U.S. Assistant Attorney in California as the FBI foils a bombing plot targeting Los Angeles. Welcome to this December 15th edition of Washington Watch. I'm your host, Jody Heiss, filling in today for Tony Perkins. Thank you so much for joining us. All right, coming up, security is up in New York City after a deadly anti-Semitic attack at a Hanukkah festival in Australia. Dr. Moshe Glick, president of Israel's 365's New Jersey's chapter and host of a targeted synagogue, will be joining us to explain what's happening amid rising anti-Semitism. Plus, authorities say they have foiled a far-left terror plot to bomb U.S. companies in California on New Year's Eve. The suspect's pro-Palestinian anti-government views raise questions about immigration. Mark Krikorian will join us to break that down. A deadly anti-Semitic terror attack struck a Jewish festival in Sydney, Australia's Bondi Beach. It killed 16 people. Authorities say it was a deliberate attack on the Jewish community. Prime Minister Anthony Albanese faces increasing pressure at home and criticism from Israel over rising anti-Semitism. And joining me now is Washington Stan reporter Casey Harper, who has been following today's story. Casey, what are authorities saying about this terror attack? How, and for that matter, how is Australia responding at this point?
Well, thanks, Jody. Police say that two shooters, a father and son, actually opened fire at this Jewish celebration of Hanukkah with more than 1,000 attendees. 15 people were tragically killed at the scene, and the father was later shot dead by police, bringing the total to 16. Victims range from children to the elderly, and dozens were injured, including police officers. Prime Minister Albanese called it a horrific anti-Semitic terrorist attack and pledged increased security for Jewish communities. Secretary of State Marco Rubio condemned the attack, saying anti-Semitism has no place in this world. Israeli Prime Minister Netanyahu criticized Australia for failing to act against rising anti-Semitism. Here's what he said after the attack.
On August 17th, about 4 months ago, I sent Prime Minister Albanese of Australia a letter in which I gave him warning that the Australian government's policy was promoting and encouraging anti-Semitism in Australia. I wrote, "Your call for a Palestinian state pours fuel on the anti-Semitic fire. It rewards Hamas terrorism. It emboldens those who menace Australian Jews and encourages the Jew hatred now stalking your streets. Anti-Semitism is a cancer. It spreads when leaders stay silent. It retreats when leaders act. I call upon you to replace weakness with action, appeasement with resolve."
Jewish leaders have warned that the attack did not come without warning, as threats and vandalism targeting Jews have surged since 2023. Authorities say the younger gunman, 24-year-old Navid Akram, was previously monitored by Australia's Domestic Intelligence Agency for ties to an Islamic State cell, just highlighting the attack's terrorist links, Jody.
Casey, this just leads right into another very concerning investigation that's taking place in California now. What do you know about that foiled bomb plot that was to take place on New Year's Eve and the rest that, that has taken place?
Yeah, that's right, Jody. It appears we're dealing with an attempt at anti-Semitic violence right here in America. So four people have been arrested over a foiled bomb plot linked to a far-left extremist group called the Turtle Island Liberation Front. Authorities say the group, which describes itself as pro-Palestinian and anti-government, plan to target multiple locations, including two companies and U.S. immigration agents on New Year's Eve. Here is what the first U.S. attorney said earlier today.
The individuals were arrested on Friday, December 12th, when the group attempted to construct and detonate IEDs out in the desert.
Officials say the plot was coordinated through a signal chat called Order of the Black Lotus, where members also discussed further attacks in the coming months. Prosecutors expect additional charges as this investigation continues, Jody.
Wow. Well, turning now, Casey, if we can, to Capitol Hill, I know there's a key health care deadline that's just right around the corner, and House Republicans are pushing for a conservative reform plan as the Obamacare subsidies are set to expire very soon. So do you know what's in the bill and what else Congress is going to be dealing with this week?
Well, Jody, the GOP health care bill is focused on free market reforms as these temporary Obamacare subsidies everyone's been talking about expire at the end of the year. Now, GOP leaders say those subsidies created during COVID use taxpayer money to support coverage that includes abortion and transgender procedures, making an extension unacceptable without major changes. Now, the bill extends association health plans and adds transparency rules for pharmacy benefit managers, PBMs, steps that Republicans say will lower costs through competition. Conservatives oppose extending subsidies without spending and policy reforms, while some moderates want just a short-term extension. Meanwhile, the Senate is expected to hold a cloture vote today on the National Defense Authorization Act. Now, with no agreement on Obamacare, millions of Americans could soon face higher premiums, Jody.
Has there been any reaction from the White House to this GOP plan, Casey? And do we know how officials at the White House and so forth are responding to some potential implications of this proposal that the GOP is putting forward?
Yes, Jody, we do actually. So earlier today at the White House, President Trump once again criticized Obamacare, asserting that its subsidies are benefiting insurance companies rather than the American people. He elaborated on his concerns in this clip.
You know, the insurance companies are making a fortune. They're up 1,700% and more, and they're taking in hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of billions of dollars, even trillions of dollars. And Obamacare gives you terrible health care. Just so you understand, Obamacare was set up, and I said it right from the beginning, for the benefit of the health insurance companies. They're making billions and billions of dollars.
Now, this is expected to be a highly debated and closely watched issue on Capitol Hill this week, Jody.
All right, Casey, thank you so much. Always appreciate you keeping us up to speed on so many stories taking place. We appreciate it.
Thanks.
All right, I want to go back now to the shooting at Australia's Bondi Beach in Sydney that targeted the city's Jewish community. And joining me now to discuss this and more is Dr. Moshe Glick, president of the New Jersey chapter of Israel 365, whose synagogue event was targeted last year by an anti-Semitic mob. Dr. Glick, welcome back to Washington Watch. Great to have you. All right, let's start with your reaction to yesterday's shooting, and how has the Jewish community been responding to it?
Yeah, unfortunately, it's not a campaign. It's a policy of the government.
Dr. Moshe, we've got it. We're having difficulty hearing you right now. We'll come back to you here in just a few moments. Let me go back to Casey, if I can. Casey, I want to go back, if we can, and talk about what's happening with right here in America. We have so many immigrants that have taken that have come into the country. And when you talked a moment ago about the foiled attempt of a potential bombing in on New Year's Eve. Let's talk about that. Just how many potential terrorists, do we have any idea, have been released here in the United States?
This has been an ongoing concern, but these recent terror attacks really highlighted, and we've seen actually recent reports come out that say 18,000, not 1,800, not 180, 18,000 confirmed or suspected terrorists have entered the United States under Biden. And that came out during a congressional hearing last week. And Joe Kent, the man who released that statistic, he was clear to tell Congress that they actually don't know how many there are. They know there are at least 18,000. And so there could actually be many more. But as you know, Jody, this is because during the Biden administration, the southern border was left wide open. At least 10 million, probably much more, many more than that, illegal immigrants came into the U.S. We don't know where they were from, where they came from, and really why they were coming. But they came in by the millions. And those are just the ones that we that came in illegally. We also know, for instance, the legal, not illegal, but the legal Afghan immigrant who came into the U.S. because of our involvement in Afghanistan. He was the one who, you know, attacked the National Guard, the man posted outside the National Guard at the White House. And so we're seeing this come at different angles. And in some ways, the chickens are coming home to roost on the immigration policies.
Wow. All right, Casey, maybe we'll have some more time to talk a little bit later. We've got Dr. Glick back, so if you will hang on, maybe we'll be able to get back with you here in a little while. Dr. Glick, welcome back. Good to have you on the program.
Thank you so much, Jody, and it's great to be back.
Okay, let's start back with where we were, your reaction to yesterday's shooting and how the Jewish community is responding.
Yeah, unfortunately, it's not surprising. Prime Minister Netanyahu predicted it. This is not about strict gun laws, right? I love, the Prime Minister talked about, the Prime Minister of Australia talked about, we're going to increase our gun laws. You know, they've got some of the strictest gun laws in the world. It's an ideological hatred. And, first they come after the Saturday people, and then these jihadists come after the Sunday people. So it's the will of democratic Western culture society to fight these jihadists around the world, or we'll all be next.
Do you think the threat of anti-Semitism is getting the attention that it needs, both here in the United States and globally?
So, thank God for President Trump and Pam Bondi, Harmeet Dillon. The last time I was on your show, talked about a case that happened at our synagogue in New Jersey, where an elderly man was attacked in front of one of our synagogues, choked. Police didn't come to his rescue. I ended up coming to his rescue to physically separate him. And what's crazy is I'm the one that got arrested. And we're so thankful for the fact that the Department of Justice has filed FACE Act charges against six individuals and two of these jihadi organizations. So hopefully it's catching the attention. There's been, unfortunately, some major events. It happened at Parkey Synagogue, one of the oldest synagogues in New York City. A mob of people. The ceasefire happened already. It's just a way to intimidate and target Jewish people. And we know it's the Jews and the Christians. We're in the same boat together. We're the canary in the coal mine, and we always have been.
Dr. Glick, I'm going to ask you, if you're able to stick over with us following the break. I've got some more questions I want to throw your way. But real quickly, before we get to the break, let's start setting the groundwork with this next question, and that is the support that we've seen for those who want to eliminate the Jewish state and the Jewish people seems to be a growing movement. We've got about 30 seconds, and then we'll continue with this after the break.
Yeah, I think so much of it is people get their, our generation gets their information from TikTok and Instagram. And, when people, and I think there's a ton of Qatari money that's being thrown at this to influence public opinion against the Jewish state. And thank God we have allies, here at Israel 365. We formulated a ton of those allies on the Jewish Christian world and recognize what a strategic and important ally the state of Israel is.
Let's hold that thought.
Sure.
And we'll pick it up more right after the break. Stay with us, Dr. Moshe Glick, and now we'll continue this conversation in just a moment.
Hello, I'm Tony Perkins, and I want to invite you to join me for Stand on the Word, a daily journey through the Bible, 10 to 15 minutes a day. That's all it takes. And in no time, you'll have finished the entire Bible. And along the way, we'll learn how to apply God's truths to the world in which we live. As we're about to start a new year and as our nation is about to celebrate 250 years, there's never been a better time for a fresh start in the Word of God. To join us, text Bible to 67742. That's Bible to 67742.
Looking for a trusted source of news that shares your Christian values? Turn to the Washington Stand, your ultimate destination for informed, faith-centered reporting. Our dedicated team goes beyond the headlines, delivering stories that matter most to believers. From breaking events to cultural insights, we provide clear, compassionate coverage through a biblical lens. Discover news you can trust at the Washington Stand, where faith and facts meet every day.
For over 4,000 years, the Jewish people have had legal, historical, and biblical ties to the land of Israel, especially the heartland of Israel, Judea and Samaria, which much of the world still calls the West Bank. To Israelis, Judea and Samaria is far more than a name. It's the center of their ancestral homeland, where nearly 80% of the Bible's events took place. Abraham purchased property in Hebron, Jacob in Shechem. Joshua made an altar on Mount Ebal and led the Israelites into a covenant before God. On Mount Gerizim, overlooking Shechem, Jesus talked to the Samaritan woman at the well about worshiping neither on Mount Gerizim nor in Jerusalem, but in spirit and in truth. Judea and Samaria is nearly a quarter of Israel's current landmass, not a small strip of land on the Jordan River, but a vital and strategic part of the nation's identity. The October 7th massacre, launched from Gaza, shattered the illusion that giving away territory brings peace. Gaza, which was once seen as the cornerstone of a two-state solution, became a launchpad for terror. Today, only 21% of Israelis support a Palestinian state. Trust in a two-state solution has all but collapsed. The Middle East is changing. Iran's grip is weakening. New alliances are forming. But Western countries and some U.S. officials still chase the mirage of a two-state solution. History speaks clearly. The 2005 Gaza withdrawal, backed by the U.S., led not to peace, but to a terrorist regime. Judea and Samaria are 24 times larger than Gaza, deeply woven into Israel's geographic and spiritual fabric. To surrender them would not bring peace. It would invite conflict and existential danger. Family Research Council stands with Israel's rightful claim to sovereignty. It's time for America to do the same, for history, for justice, and for lasting security in the Middle East.
Welcome back to Washington Watch. Thank you so much for tuning in today. I'm Jody Heiss, filling in for Tony, and I'm continuing my conversation now with my guest from the previous segment, Dr. Moshe Glick, who is the president of the New Jersey chapter of Israel 365, whose synagogue event was targeted last year by an anti-Semitic mob. Dr. Glick, thank you so much for sticking with us. We appreciate it.
Sure.
All right. The Jewish community is certainly reeling from yesterday's deadly shooting at a Hanukkah event at Bondi Beach in Sydney, Australia. And certainly that's prompted Jewish groups to call for heightened security amid all sorts of potential for a copycat attack. And, of course, those calls for more security is not just in Australia, but also here in the United States and elsewhere, where we have likewise seen a rise of anti-Semitism ever since the October 7th attacks against Israel. That's been more than 2 years ago now. So what do you make of the responses that we're seeing to yesterday's shooting? Is it enough? Do we need more? What's your thoughts on that?
Yeah, I don't think it's nearly enough. I think we apply Western culture to this, and it's when you have an ideological hatred, which it's if somebody's willing to kill themselves. I mean, these two shooters on in Australia, they didn't think they were going to kind of hit and run. They were there to kill as many Jews as they could, starting from the youngest victim, 10 years old, up to I believe it was an 87-year-old Holocaust survivor. These are not normal people. These are not things where we can, we're gonna have another armed security guard at the front door. That doesn't work. And you know, my fear, and I think the fear of the Jewish and the Christian community, and we've already seen churches that have been shot up. We've seen synagogues that have been shot up. And either we as Americans stand united and say that this jihadist mentality is a sickening cancer within our society, and we're going to stand up united to fight it. We're going to have stricter gun laws. We're going to build a stronger door in front of the synagogue or in front of the church. That's not going to work. It's such a deeper, sicker problem, and hopefully the world is starting to wake up to that fact.
We certainly hope so. I know coming into the segment and introducing you, I mentioned the synagogue event that you hosted, that it was attacked. And we had you on previously earlier in the year to talk about that. But remind our audience what happened in that event.
Sure. So we hosted a Israel cultural event. Our partners, Project Zion, which is a young Christian movement, they were with us as well, celebrating. We had celebration of Jewish music, culture. We had an Israeli soldier who spoke about his brother who was killed in Lebanon. It was during the mourning period. There's a 30-day mourning period. And a violent and aggressive group of jihadists marched. The original plan for that event was going to be at our home, my wife Renee and mine home. We had gotten threats. People had come to our house. We captured on Ring camera, leaving threatening letters. We ended up moving it to the synagogue, and a violent group just marched right up to the synagogue. Police did a horrific job. It's unfortunate, you know, I've been living in the same town for 20-something years. Allowed them to march right up to the front, literally to the front door. One of the Islamists ended up putting a 65-year-old, they act with vuvuzelas, which are a loud noisemaker, put it right up to my ear, swatted it away, and one of them came forward to attack me. A different one of the attendees pepper sprayed that person, thinking he was about to attack me. About 10 seconds had passed, and then the Islamist ended up putting this 64-year-old man into a chokehold, tackled him down and right in front of the synagogue. It was shocking that in 2024, at that point, America, that you could have literally people march up to a synagogue. It almost felt like, you know, Kristallnacht of the 1930s Germany with the vile anti-Semitism. And what ended up happening, I mean, what's the crazy part is that I ended up using physical forced to separate the Islamists from this attacking. I'm a trained EMT. I'm a dentist by training. Saw the man's, the victim's legs starting to buckle. He was losing consciousness. This is about 45 seconds into the event. Called for the police multiple times. All the video is available. You can Google search it under Israel 365 Dr. Moshe Glick. Again, Israel 365 Dr. Moshe Glick. You'll see the video. And the crazy part is me trying to defend or protect somebody from being literally choked out and killed in front of a synagogue. I'm the one that ended up getting arrested. That legal case is ongoing. And again, we're so thankful to Harmeet Dillon. They had put together a press conference on the 29th of September, and that's available online as well. And they actually charged civilly right now the Islamist that attacked the synagogue. You know, it's kind of this weird dichotomy world where I still have charges against me on the local level versus the federal government. It looked at all the evidence and clearly came out to the correct conclusion. And we're hoping that the federal government, and it's a call on the federal government to look into the Essex County Prosecutor's Office, the West Orange Police Department, and to look at, you know, these facts. So, again, we're super grateful to Harmeet Dillon and her team for bringing light to this matter.
That's just such an unbelievable story. What do you think some lessons perhaps should people take from your case as well as yesterday's attack?
Yeah, I think that, you know, you can't count on somebody else that's gonna save you, right? I think, unfortunately, you know, and there are bad actors out there. And I've been to dozens of pro-Israel, anti-jihad rallies. And, you know, unfortunately, either the police are overwhelmed or they're not equipped to handle these things. And in the end of the day, I think you need to protect yourself. You know, I personally have a concealed carry license, and I think everybody should have one. You know, I love the fact when they start saying, you know, again, this, I mentioned this earlier, like Australia said, oh, we have to get stricter gun laws, which, you know, which stricter gun laws would have stopped those two maniacs from getting weapons and just picking off Jewish people at a Hanukkah celebration. I mean, it's a sickness. Or maybe an armed good guy could have stopped them earlier, since it took 20 minutes in some of the reports I've said before the police even fired a shot back at these jihadi crazies.
Yeah, it's amazing how they always pivot back to guns being the problem rather than those who are filled with hate. Real quickly, what do you make of the Trump administration's response to your case?
Yeah, so I'm very thankful. It's in the early stages. It takes a while for the federal government to get going, as you can imagine. But, you know, the Department of Justice took some time, but they filed FASAC. They reviewed all the evidence. They filed FASACs. And my understanding is that they're starting to look into the, I don't know for certain, but they're starting to look into the Essex County Prosecutor's Office.
Right.
And people that have really targeted me for an anti-Semitic bias. There's no, if you look
Thank
at
you.
The evidence, there's no reason. Thank you, Jody.
Dr. Moshe Glick, thank you so much for joining us. Incredible story, and we look forward to talking to you further in the future. All right, we're going to bring this same type of thing home right after the break. What's happening in Southern California? A foiled attempt. Thank goodness for that. We'll be back.
What is God's role in government? What does the separation of church and state really mean? And how does morality shape a nation? President John Adams said our Constitution was made only for moral and religious people. It is wholly inadequate to the government of any other. Join Family Research Council for God and Government, a powerful series that explores the connection between biblical principles and the American government, equipping you with truth to engage in today's most pressing debates. We'll uncover the foundations of our nation's history and why it's relevant for today. Join us to defend God's plan for government, because faith and freedom were never meant to be separate. You can view the course at prayvotestand.org/God and Government or on the Stand Firm app.
The book of Hebrews says that the Word of God is living and active, sharper than any two-edged sword, piercing to the division of soul and of spirit, of joints and of marrow, and discerning the thoughts and intentions of the heart. Stand on the Word is Family Research Council's journey through the living and active Word of God. Follow the plan starting January 1st. Spend 10 to 15 minutes a day reading God's Word, and over the course of 2 years, discover that the Bible is one big story, a story of many words pointing to the Word, the one who is the same yesterday, today, and forever. Because the Word is alive, and His name is Jesus. Find the Bible reading plan and daily devotionals from Tony Perkins at frc.org/Bible. Join us as we stand on the Word.
Welcome back to Washington Watch. I'm Jody Heiss filling in today for Tony. Thank you so much for joining us. All right, as media outlets all over the globe are honing in on yesterday's mass shooting in Australia, federal authorities right here in America announced that they have foiled a far left-wing terror plot to bomb multiple U.S. companies in Southern California on New Year's Eve. As much like the suspected Bondi Beach terrorists in Australia. But the plotters of the foiled New Year's Eve attack were allegedly extremists motivated by pro-Palestinian, anti-law enforcement, anti-government ideology. And no doubt we are deeply relieved that the attack was foiled, but is that relief just perhaps a fleeting positive feeling, particularly given how many known or suspected terrorists were allowed to come into our nation during the Biden administration? That in itself is worthy of consideration. Well, here now to discuss this further is Mark Krikorian. He's Executive Director of the Center for Immigration Studies. Mark, thank you for joining us. Welcome back to Washington Watch.
Glad to be here. Thanks for having me.
Okay. Can you go further into what we know about this alleged bombing in the plot there in California and the motives of these suspects?
Yeah, I don't know any of the details on this. I just know what everybody else has seen. But this is the kind of thing we're going to see more of. We've seen it in Europe. We just saw it in Australia. And we've seen this kind of thing here in this country as well, and we're going to see more. And the fact is that President Biden let the border open, and thousands of people we suspect might be terrorists, but even if it's only a couple of hundred, how many does it take? It took two people in Australia to murder all those, 15 people at that Hanukkah celebration. It took 19 terrorists to stage 9/11. You have to keep, it matters to look and to find for that needle in the haystack, because one terrorist needle can do a lot of damage.
Yeah, you're not kidding. I had on here just a little while ago, Casey Harper, who was talking about this very thing, and you bring up an outstanding point. Just last week, Congress had a hearing and examined this further, and the director of the National Counterterrorism Center, Joe Kent, actually testified, I believe it was Thursday of last week, that we have some 18,000 known or suspected terrorists who were allowed to come into this country during the Biden administration. Does that number shock you?
After doing this for 30 years, no, it's hard to shock me. It shocks me what the Biden administration did, but this was an inevitable consequence of that. How could that not happen? I mean, imagine you're a narco-terrorist or an Islamist or even a Chinese military intelligence. If the stupid Americans are letting anybody who crosses the border in and just giving them, you know, a piece of paper and dropping them off at the bus station, you would be derelict in your duty not to be sneaking people into the country, even if you don't have any specific plans. Let's get some guys in there now that the door is open and we can see, you know, we'll decide later what we're going to do with them. So while it is a shocking statistic, I got to say, I'm kind of beyond the ability to be shocked at this point because of what this previous administration did.
Yeah. Well, 18,000 is a shocking number to me. As you said, it is to you, but you're not surprised by what the previous administration did. So what about the current administration? How has the Trump administration been doing? Of course, we know the borders are more secure now, but have they been able to remove some of these individuals? What do you know about what the Trump policy has done in this regard?
I wouldn't just pass over the border being secure just as a kind of throwaway line, because the border isn't just more secure. There are fewer illegal aliens coming over the border than not just since the 1960s, which is the way people talk about it. This is actually the lowest level since the 19th century, because back in the 40s and 50s and whatever, they didn't know what was going on the border. We have cameras everywhere now. We know everybody who's coming over, and no one's coming over. So that itself really is remarkable and has to be noted as such. As far as getting people out of the country, they're doing what they can, but most illegal immigrants live in sanctuary cities. Right. We've done the estimates, and it's like 55% of all illegal aliens are protected by these sanctuary policies. So ICE can go looking for them, but they have to know who they are. They have to know what to look for. Yeah, they're doing everything they can. They obviously take it very seriously. But
let me ask you this before I let you go. We've got less than a minute here. But the 18,000 figure, it's an estimate, but could the number be significantly higher than that, do you think?
Could be, probably lower, just because you usually, when you say known or suspected, you're casting the net pretty wide. I suspect it's probably less, but like I said, what if it's half that? Really? Is 9,000 terrorists something that we don't have to worry about? Is 1,000 terrorists being let into the country not a big deal? No, of course it is. So no, I don't think the number's bigger than that, but the number's already preposterous. If it's 10% of that, it's way too much.
Great, great point. Thank you, Mark Gregorian of the Center for Immigration Studies, for your incredible insights on all of this. We appreciate it a great deal. Thank you for joining us.
Thank you.
All right, coming up, I'll be joined by our own panel of pundits from FRC to discuss some of the headlines that were eclipsed by all the other things we've been talking about today. So there's other things in the news. We'll get to as much of it as we can right after the break. Stay tuned.
At Family Research Council, we believe religious freedom is a fundamental human right that all governments must protect. For years, Islamist militants in Nigeria have targeted Christians and other religious minority groups with brutal violence. Since 2009, 52,000 Christians have been slaughtered. A staggering 89% of Christian martyrs in the world today are from Nigeria. The first Trump administration declared Nigeria a country of particular concern, a designation reserved for countries whose governments engage in or tolerate religious freedom violations. However, this designation of Nigeria was quickly reversed by the Biden administration. Following consistent calls from FRC President Tony Perkins and other religious leaders across the U.S., President Donald Trump has responded.
Christianity is facing an existential threat in Nigeria. Thousands and thousands of Christians are being killed. I am hereby making Nigeria a country of particular concern.
This is a huge step forward for the protection of Christians in Nigeria, as well as religious freedom across the world. While this opens the door for the U.S. government to pressure Nigerian leaders to protect vulnerable Christians, it is only the beginning. We must continue to pray diligently, work strategically, and stand firm for the protection of religious liberty across the globe.
In times like these, we need something solid to stand on. That's why I'm inviting you to join me on January the 1st for Stand on the Word, a daily journey through the entire Bible. Each day, we'll read God's Word together, discuss how to apply His truths to our lives. 15 minutes that can transform your year. Join me and thousands of others as we stand strong by standing on the Word of God. Text Bible to 67742. That's Bible to 67742.
Should a Christian support Israel? That question has become one of the most emotionally charged issues of our time, both in the world and within the church. Family Research Council President Tony Perkins offers a clear, biblical, and prophetic answer. In his latest book, he examines Israel's past, present, and future through the lens of Scripture, revealing why support for Israel is not rooted in politics, partisanship, or cultural sentiment, but in the unchanging promises of God. Drawing from Genesis to Revelation, Tony Perkins demonstrates that the ultimate rationale for a Christian support for Israel is spiritual. Should a Christian support Israel invites believers to see beyond headlines and ideologies, returning to the foundation of God's Word to understand His heart for His chosen people and the blessings that flow when we stand with what He has established forever. Text the word Israel to 67742 for more information.
Welcome back to Washington Watch. I'm Jody Heiss, filling in today for Tony. Thank you so much for joining us as well. All right, before I get to our panelists for discussion, I've got a couple of things I want to put out there to you that are extremely important. Of course, we're approaching the beginning of a brand new year, and there's no better time than that to come along with us and place your focus on strengthening your biblical worldview in 2026. And you can help do that for yourself and your family, your loved ones, by joining the FRC team and thousands of others for our Stand on the Word journey. It's a 2-year chronological journey through the entire Bible. And listen, just 15 minutes a day will transform your life, will transform your family, your loved ones. So come along with us. Join our Stand on the Word journey, and you can get more information by going to frc.org/Bible or simply text the word Bible to 67742. That's Bible to 67742. The next thing I want to bring your way real quickly before I get to our panelists is, of course, next year we're approaching the 250th anniversary of our country. What an incredible time that is. And we want to encourage you to support the work here at Family Research Council as we are standing in the gap for faith, family, and freedom on so many different ways. And right now you have an opportunity to double your gift now through December 31st. Thanks to a special challenge match, everything you give will have twice the impact. So come along with us to find out more ways how you can join this opportunity. Text the word America to 67742. All right, now let me get to our panelists. Of course, there's so much coverage has been on the attacks in really across the world. We've seen it obviously in Australia, but Syria, Brown University, the foiled attempt right here in our own country. But in addition to all that, there are some other very notable items of news that have been taking place. And one of the things that we love to do on Mondays is to take a look at some of the weekend's headlines with our FRC panel of pundits. So here now to join me is Casey Harper with Washington Stan and Travis Weber, who's Vice President for Policy and Government Affairs. Gentlemen, thank you for joining us.
Great to have you.
All All right, Travis, let me start with you. Some of the other news, the AI, artificial intelligence, a huge issue that's gaining a lot of discussion and talk these days. And we've got a little battle going on. Some states want to regulate AI in their states. Then you have the president who's wanting to regulate some of it from a federal perspective. I think the bottom line, we all know this is a potentially frightening area that needs some regulation. So let me toss out to you and get your thoughts.
Yeah, Jody. So the dynamic we have going on here involves the president wanting AI to continue to develop and for research and technology to keep pace with who he sees as competitors, the Chinese and others globally, as AI is increasingly becoming a national security issue in its role in defense, in addition to many other sectors of a nation's economy. So it's becoming almost an all-inclusive tool for human development in the minds of many, right? So if you're looking at it that way, you're thinking it's number one priority to make sure that we advance in this area. On the flip side of that coin, however, are the stories that are coming out more and more now of youth who have, and adults too, but there's a lot of focus on children, the impact of technology and artificial intelligence on their development. But just look at these tragic stories of people becoming so immersed in technology that they're developing relationships with AI-generated characters online and starting to invest so much in those that they commit suicide when those relationships do not play out in their minds, do not play out reality as they've been playing out in their minds. And so this and other issues are what are leading many states to say, let's hold up here. Let's slow this train a bit and say we need to take a closer look. There are voices speaking out on this at the federal level, including Senator Josh Hawley and others. But really, you have states who are saying we need to be careful about this, the path that we're walking down here. And we at Family Research Council want to defend male and female created in the image of God, the human dignity of the person, families, and the integrity of families, we agree with the concerns about the implications for the family and the human person when it comes to technology and AI. So that's basically the battle line here. Now, the news now is President Trump issued an executive order accelerating federal development and wanting to override these pesky state laws which stand in the way. Understandable when you look at the efficiency question in all of this. But we as America, we have to look at the Constitution, the separation of powers, and the federalist system. And this is something that's going to be playing out in the question of AI development.
Yeah, it's an enormous issue. So, Casey, let me throw it over your way. I know you've been following this, too. What are your thoughts on it?
Yeah, we've covered this a lot on the Outstanding podcast as well. Had different perspectives on to talk about this, the impact it has on the family in particular, which Travis mentioned, is very real. And I think it's kind of telling that we have this cutting edge military technology that could be the thing that decides who prevails, U.S. and China, but also your 10-year-old daughter can access it in her pocket. And so this thing that's powerful enough to win a war is also accessible to children. And those two dueling motives are working here. You know, it reminds me, as far as the precedent, which you mentioned, it reminds me of 2017, I believe it was, when President Trump tried to, via executive order, put an end to sanctuary cities. And that went to the courts, and the courts ruled via the 10th Amendment that basically Congress would have to pass a law to do that. And so I think that there's going to be a lot of legal trouble on this in the courts for the president, because there's plenty of precedent of Congress putting restrictions on how states can regulate things. But when via executive order, I think it's been a pretty tough sell to the courts. So this is something that states are going to challenge it, and I'm not sure how well he's going to fare.
Jody, I'll just say, too, you know, thinking about this in historical terms, this reminds me of an area of discussion that came up during the battle between the U.S. and the Soviet Union in the Cold War. And at that time, it was a real concern that the checks and balances in the United States would not allow us to keep pace with the authoritarian efficiency of the Soviet Union, which can steamroll anyone internally to achieve its external objectives. And we all see how that turned out. The Soviet Union collapsed. The entire communist world collapsed very quickly because it was hollow on the inside. And it's a warning. It's a note of caution to us today. If we as America think we can excel using external measures, just looking at the natural and just looking at what we want to accomplish on earth without remembering the spiritual and moral fiber underneath our country. This is a question that is going to rise on this AI issue again today.
No question about that. Well, let me switch gears a little bit, too, because there's so many different items taking place. And, Casey, I'll start with you on this. There's another area that's been getting a lot of attention over the weekend is some of the scandals that have taken place. And lawmakers on Capitol Hill are dealing with this. But I'm speaking specifically the high-profile gambling issues that are surfacing right now, and even some bipartisan support to address some of this.
That's right. We're seeing bipartisan support in the Senate to begin to curtail this explosion in online gambling in particular. I mean, casinos have been around for a long time, but the geography and just the need to get up and go out of your house to go there has sort of kept what we've known for a long time can be addictive. It's kept it at bay. But now when you combine the addictive nature of gambling with the addictive nature of smartphones, and we all know how addictive smartphones are, even without adding on some other vice like gambling or pornography, or even social media is very addictive as well. So you start combining these and you're getting points, and you can put, if you combine social media with gambling, it's become very addictive. And the research, this is from Siena, says that half of young men ages 18 to 49 have an active online sports betting account. So if you see a young man, two young men walking around, one of them has an active account. It's exploded. If you watch sports, you see the ads for it everywhere. And then, but what are the outcomes? And we kind of have this intuitive sense that gambling is bad for people. It destroys communities. Native American reservations like languish because of this stuff. But here's a 2021. This was published in peer review, very respected journal. They did a large study, and it said this. I just found this excerpt I thought was very interesting. It says gambling is associated with higher financial distress. Imagine that. Lower financial inclusion and planning. Negative lifestyle. Health, well-being, and leisure outcomes. Gambling is associated with higher rates of future unemployment and physical disability, and at the highest levels with a substantially increased mortality.
Wow.
So it's on the soul level, it's cancerous in a way that I don't think we fully understand. And the states and the government officials who are tasked with regulating it have a perverse incentive, because the very ones who are tasked with regulating it talk a lot about the tax revenue that they're gonna get from allowing it to happen. And so this is something I'm glad to see bipartisan attention on it, because it's a major problem. It's widespread. Half of young men have one. It's not something we can ignore.
Yeah, absolutely. And that brings up, Travis, when you were talking even about AI a little while ago, you brought into it the role, the impact that could have on the family. Well, no question, this gambling issue, likewise, what Casey was just talking about, enormous impact on families. So what needs to be done with this?
Yeah, I mean, just speaking of the impact, you know, we can see the effect, the magnifying effect of that technology and the smartphone, the computer will have on an issue like gambling. When in the former years, we had places like Las Vegas and Atlantic City, New Jersey. Atlantic City, New Jersey is almost it's like a ghost town, relatively speaking, compared to what it used to be as a gambling hub, because the focus has shifted online. And so, Jody, I think on this issue, what needs to be done is for the reality of the ugly underbelly to be exposed. This cannot be seen as something that's harmless, innocuous. You know, it's kind of almost winked at or joked at when discussed. It's like, I was out at the casino doing this and that. Well, when that sort of lighthearted approach is taken, it prevents and conceals, prevents people from seeing the evil, the harm that comes from out from within, right? And we're not talking about people gathering in their home and you know, betting $5 each other among friends as they play a game of cards. We're not talking about that. We're talking about the casinos and the organizations and businesses behind online gambling, which there's a reason they have so much money. And the reason is the system is predatory. It's designed to be that way. It's designed to extract and almost like human strip mining, pull away the resources from these human subjects to enrich the corporations behind them. That is problematic, and that should not be.
Absolutely.
It's not the recipe for a healthy society.
It's a great word picture there for that. Before we run out of time, while I've got you, Travis, let me another bizarre story to me that we're looking at. The Wall Street Journal, I believe, came out with this, but we're seeing with surrogacy, the Chinese trying to make a huge effort to have U.S.-born babies.
Yeah.
What's going on here?
Yeah, so it's a bizarre story in the Wall Street Journal about billionaires in China having 100 or more children, and these are multiple Chinese individuals who will have the money to pay, and the system in the United States is available, often in secret, to support this as people are being enriched off of the desire of these men to have all these children for different motives, and some of those are not stated. It might be, you know, a deception going on as well. But in the minds of some of them, for example, one wants to just have children to select from to take over his business one day. And others just, you know, want this to be having all these children in the United States to gain U.S. citizenship with a member of their family. Because, as you know, the birthright citizenship issue in the news again with President Trump's executive order, which we don't know if it will apply to all these cases, but taking advantage of the fact that if a baby's born on the U.S. on U.S. soil, they're automatically a U.S. citizen. So it's a bizarre story. What I think needs to happen here, again, is light to be brought and attention to be brought to what is happening here. And again, Jody, we see a theme of technology intersecting humanity, right? Children are supposed to come from a mother and a father in the bond of marriage. And here where people are using surrogacy and all sorts of technologically driven practices to almost, quote unquote, have a baby across continents, that's not the family that we see in Genesis 1 and 2 as God designed it. So we need to return to God's design, and we need to be scrutinizing anything that looks like it's departing from God's design and asking the question, is it the best for our society? Clearly, there are many problems here, not only for the family, but national security implications as well. When we don't know what is happening with regard to Chinese having children through surrogates on U.S. soil. We do know from the story the FBI was interviewing some of the people involved in this process, which that alone should tell us we need to be taking a closer look at what's happening here.
It is absolutely bizarre. Casey, let me come back to you. We were talking about this earlier in the program with you specifically about these 18,000 or so, plus or minus, known or suspected terrorists who are in the country. We didn't have time to finish that conversation, so let me give you an opportunity to wrap up some of your thoughts where you were taking
sure.
us.
Sure. I think that it's important to understand that the policies to keep the southern border, which were pitched as being opened, which were pitched as being so compassionate, actually have real-world consequences that are not compassionate at all. And so whenever Christians in particular, we can be very susceptible to arguments made in the name of compassion, there has to be wisdom that comes in and says, okay, we want to be compassionate, we want to be kind to people, of course, but what is wise? Where are people coming from? Do they share our worldview? Do they, you know, how many are coming? Are they assimilating? These are the kind of wisdom questions we need to be asking and not be guilted into making decisions or guilted into silence because of an argument made on compassion, which I think is what happened under the Biden administration.
Yeah. And Travis, probably 45 seconds, but let me just kick off of this. I know you've got a heart for international individuals and so forth. We all do, but you particularly are leading the charge on that. There's got to be a balance between security and allowing people in our country.
Yeah, so I mean, country has the right to control its borders. Without that, among other things, it's not really a country. It can't be defined as a secure country. And so that has to be looked at when it comes to the identity of the country. But I think the America needs to continue to walk in its identity as a beacon of hope and liberty and a place of refuge for those seeking freedom from persecution globally. We know Christians are being heavily persecuted around the world. So we believe the United States should remain that place when they're vetted. But we should welcome Christians from all places and others who are truly persecuted on account of their religion and welcome them to our shores to live as part of the American experiment.
Casey Harper, Travis Weber, great having you guys.
Thank you.
Thanks, Jody.
There's enough news to make your head spin, but we try to bring it all to you from a biblical worldview perspective. Thank you for joining us today on Washington Watch. We'll see you again tomorrow right here. Have a good evening.
Washington Watch with Tony Perkins is brought to you by Family Research Council. To support our efforts to advance faith, family, and freedom, please text GIVE to 67742. That's GIVE to 67742. Portions of the show discussing candidates are brought to you by Family Research Council Action. For more information, please visit TonyPerkins.com.